Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Today, we're going to find out about how nutrients in microalgae can be an environmental friendly alternative to fish, from Martin Luther University in Germany, published in the Journal of Applied Psychology. Interesting that we have food sources that could help from the depletion of fishing that's occurring now and give us better nutrients, healthier nutrients. That's only one of many that I'm going to share today in the way of health. But also today I'm going to raise a question right after health. And then I'd like for you to think about this and then call us at our number, and I'll give you the number in a moment, and give us your opinion. I'd like to hear from you. I'll tell you what that question is in a few moments. Then we're going to have a few video bios. We're going to have the man behind Lancetgate. This is a breaking science scandal with global ramifications. A Dr. James Todaro will be on. It's a relatively short segment, but what's in it is important. There was an article published about a drug that can be used to help people with coronavirus. Saves their lives. It's inexpensive. It's not patented. It's off a patent. And yet, everyone, starting with Anthony Fauci and the CDC, the FDA, the World Health Organization, all the mainstream media, all as if they were with one mind and one voice, said, this is a dangerous drug. No, don't use it. The publication that tried to put a stake through the heart of this drug was The Lancet. Lo and behold, they had to retract the article because they found out it was fraudulent. So how did such an important publication end up providing a fraudulent article? Who's behind all this? The doctor will explain. Interesting, the doctor who blew the whistle from Minnesota, a medical doctor who's also a legislator in Washington, they're attacking him now. They're trying to go after his medical license, all because he said, and rightly so, that they were trying to falsify death certificates, people dying of a stroke or people who were in hospice care who died. They were trying to make it all COVID to build up their statistics. Why? Why would they want to do this? Why, if we did not have a pandemic of death, which we did not, and this is a milder than the flu, which it is, all the statistics now show that, and it's dangerous keeping healthy people and especially children quarantined, which we shouldn't have done. Other countries in the world that did not quarantine, like Thailand and South Korea, they didn't have much death at all. I think Thailand, with 23 million people, had 7 deaths. Why did we get every single thing wrong? Was it just because we have a group of stupid, vile, incompetent scientific bureaucrats and technocrats? Or was there something more maniacal? We'll discuss that. Also, George Orwell in 1984. How does freedom die? We'll show you. It's not that difficult. And also from John Whitehead, tyranny without a tyrant. The deep state's divide and conquer strategy is working. Oh, it sure is. So why aren't we paying attention? We'll deal with that. I'm not sure we'll get to everything, but as much as we can do, we will. We begin with the latest on health and healing. Microalgae could provide an alternative source for the healthy omega-3 fatty acids for humans, while also being more environmentally friendly to produce more than popular fish species. This is the result of a new study by scientists at the Martin Luther University, and the study is published in a peer-reviewed journal. By the way, microalgae has also been the focus for several decades of research, initially as a raw material for alternative fuels, but more recently as a source of nutrients in the human diet. They are called photobioreactors. And the question is, can they really take the place of fish? And the answer is yes, they can. So that's good news. And spirulina, chlorella, those are two algaes. They have more protein usable by the body than either meat, dairy, chicken, or fish. So people are into them. From Southeast University, naturally occurring flavonoids in herbs and vegetables found to induce cancer cell death. One of these is lutein, L-U-T-E-O-L-I-N. It's a flavonoid. It's found in a lot of herbs. And oh, for example, you can find it in chamomile. You can find it in celery and green peppers and thyme as just examples. It's widely studied. It has a lot of biological activities. And besides having anti-inflammatory and antioxidant activity, lutein is perhaps best known for its anti-cancer activities. According to a study published in the European Journal of Cancer Prevention, lutein is able to prevent the development of tumors, largely by inactivating chemical signals and gene expression pathways essential for cancer cells. To explore the influence of lutein on esophageal cancer cells, researchers at the Southeast University recently conducted an in vitro study using ECA-109 cells. Their objective was to determine the mechanisms under lutein's anti-cancer effects. The researchers reported their findings in an article published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Food, Science, and Human Wellness. And it's very simple. Lutein stops the growth of cancer by inducing what is called a programmed cell death or apoptosis. So that's good news. So have more of your fruits and vegetables, more herbs, and help protect yourself from cancer. From Beijing University of Chinese Medicine comes a study about meditation. Now, we know that meditation can treat all forms and impact psychological, cardiovascular, digestive diseases, as well as chronic pain. Well, a vegetarian diet can effectively prevent hypertension, high blood pressure, metabolic diseases like diabetes and obesity, and certain cancers. Meditation and vegetarian diets have been recognized as components of a healthy lifestyle and have therefore attracted more people around the world. Meditation can help regulate overall health through neuroendocrine immune network. And changes in dietary habits can affect the composition of the intestinal bacteria, which in turn affects your human physiology, your metabolism, your nutrition, your immune function through the bacteria-intestine-brain axis. So the takeaway message is this. When you engage in daily meditation and you're on a vegan diet, you have a much healthier human gut microbiota, and that helps your immune system and all your biochemical markers in your body. This was published in a peer-reviewed journal, so that's important. Also, Penn State University did a study that there's antioxidants in corn that could aid in irritable bowel disorder protection. So that's good, and that's because of its anti-inflammatory flavonoids that are in corn. So have organic corn and help protect you against inflammatory bowel disease. And then EGCG, that's epigallocatechin gallate, that's green tea, reverses a type of gastric cancer. This is Northeastern Normal University. And so take your green tea. I suggest 200 to 1,000 milligrams a day. And from Stanford University comes a study that as we lose our REM sleep, our lifespan suffers. So your sleep patterns are directly aligned with a longer life. Bad sleep, shorter life. Good sleep, longer life. It's that simple. Now, we've gone many times over all the different ways that we shorten our sleep. Eating too close to going to bed, certainly not within 3 hours. Having water too close to go to bed, or any liquid, so then you break your sleep to wake up, to urinate. Having light on in the room. Having noise and not wearing earplugs. Having electromagnetic pulse equipment, cell phone, computer, television on, and not realizing that until you unplug the power, not just turn it off, it's still emanating electromagnetic pulses. Or having anxiety about things that you are concerned about. Those are the primary reasons we lose sleep. So just do the opposite. Before you go to bed, write down numerically, number one, tomorrow I'm going to deal with this, 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 this. Go right down the list. That disconnects then from the left brain having to go into anabolic thinking mode while you're asleep. Simple. It's not difficult. Olive oil has what we call polyphenols. And those oils and polyphenols that improves cardiovascular markers for young, healthy men. University of Barcelona, which is in Spain. So the takeaway message is simple. We all want healthy cholesterol. We want very low LDL because it's a bad cholesterol. We want high HDL. That's a good cholesterol. We want moderate, not terribly low nor terribly high, overall cholesterol, maybe 150. And olive oil helps do that. It's that simple. It was published in the Journal of Nutrition, a major peer-reviewed journal. And also, from Cambridge University in the United Kingdom, people who work in jobs that require less physical activity, typically office and desk-based jobs, are at a lower risk of subsequent poor cognitive behavior than those who work in more physical activity. So the lack of physical activity and exercise are known risk factors for major health conditions, including cognitive impairment like memory and concentration problems. However, evidence as to whether physical activity actually protects against cognitive decline has mixed results. This is just one of those mixed results. I'm still coming down on the side that the more physical activity, the better cognition, because I've seen it in people. Mine is not a theoretical examination. It's real. I've helped a lot of people who have memory loss, the beginning of dementia, advanced dementia, advanced Alzheimer's, all improved when the more exercise they did. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, and I'm going to give you a question. I want you to think on it. Don't react. Think. And then call in and share your comments. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you all. I'm Gary Nall. This program is about empowering people. We look at everything that challenges us, that disempowers us, and we challenge it, but always offering a constructive, positive outcome. Today, we are immersed in the United States in one of the most contentious, hotly debated issues, and that is making the history of any person that engaged in anything that would be considered racist as a pariah. That means those who were actual racist and those who engaged in some activity that we would now consider racist and insensitive to the human condition. So people are expunging monuments, and then they go after the people who were part of American history, like George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and others. Now, maybe some of these people deserve it, but how will we know unless we have an open, honest discourse, including bring in historians to tell us the truth about each person, so we have a way of weighing whether or not this person deserves the, let's say, the reputation they have been given historically or now or not. But right now we have people who have little to no knowledge of real history simply saying because we don't like this person or we believe this person was bad or this person owned slaves or whatever it is, they should be expunged. Now, mind you, the key is not whether you choose to say someone should be expunged like Christopher Columbus, but I don't believe he should be expunged. Why? Because what he did was so egregious. He was such a genocidalist, far more than racist. And he didn't care about native life in the Americas, in Santo Domingo and other places that he visited. These people were simply there to look for gold and silver, which there was very little of, by the way, and get that back to Spain. That meant he was an extraordinarily dangerous person. So we shouldn't have a celebration of Columbus Day. We should have Indigenous Day. But that would mean that you should put an indigenous statue for those who are here and a true and honest history of the culture that was here prior to Columbus. That's just one example. But then we shouldn't be hypocritical. If we're going to go after historical figures, before you go after them, give them the best and worst that they are. and then judge. And each of us will judge in our own way. I'm going to give you an example. Let's take George Washington. Washington's positive aspects was he was not the most brilliant general. In fact, he made a lot of blunders and lost more battles than he won. But he was perhaps a better spy master for gaining intelligence, which gave him an advantage, and that's one of the most brilliant things he could have done, because he really had just a ragtag army way below the formidable forces of the British Empire. He was never charged, by the way, when he was in office, with abusing power. In fact, he would often be willing to surrender his power, such as surrendering his military commission to Congress, to assure separation of the military from civilian control of the government. Even King George III commented on this, that it would make him the greatest man in the world for doing so. Because look today, the most powerful people in Washington are not the President of the United States, but the generals and the people supporting the military-industrial complex. They're dictating everything on foreign policy. And domestic organizations like the FBI and Justice Department are dictating, through their technocrats, domestic policy. Everyone else just seems to be a figurehead. Not Washington. He willingly stepped down after two terms. Many wanted him to run a third term. There were no term limits then, but he said no. You know, and that became the standard of serving two terms, maximum. He used his presidency as an example of future presidents, especially in foreign matters. He said, maintain friendly, cordial relations, but remain neutral in foreign conflicts. He tried to avoid U.S. being involved in wars at any cost during his presidency. Now, he was completely unlike both Jefferson and Madison that were very pro-war. He was known for signing many treaties with other countries. He appointed cabinet members because of their qualifications, not because they agreed upon his politics. For example, Thomas Jefferson was his Secretary of State and disagreed with him vehemently. And even more vehement was Alexander Hamilton, who was a Federalist, and they disagreed on many issues. But during his presidency, he signed the first copyright law. He was the first to tax alcohol. He ratified the Bill of Rights. And he also had a great reputation for providing the best medical care at the time. And without him leading the little army that they had, poorly trained, poorly equipped, starving, one-third to half of his entire army starved to death or froze during the last major war campaign. They just didn't have food and they didn't have proper shelter. So that would have been over. Quite simply, we can accurately say that without George Washington, the Revolutionary War would have been lost. All those that supported the Revolutionary War would have been hung or shot, their properties confiscated, and that would have been it. England would have still been here. We would have no freedoms that we have today. So that's on one side of the scale. But he had a negative side. He was very rich. He owned 50,000 acres in Virginia, Maryland, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and later what would be West Virginia. He wanted Native Indians to adopt Western ways and become farmers, which they refused, and rightly so. He was responsible for sending General Mad Anthony Wayne on a campaign to westernize the Indians, which turned into a scorched earth campaign that has been called a genocide by some. It was during the Revolution that his thoughts favoring abolition started. And when he made his will, it contained an order to give freedom to his slaves. As president, he lived in Pennsylvania, and which already had a gradual abolition act in place. By the way, over 30 years before this, there was already freedom for the slaves, and that should have been a template to use, but it was not. And he was one of the largest, not the largest, landowner in the United States. And he owned a lot of slaves. He inherited most of those slaves from his father when he died. He was Much of his fortune came from his whiskey industry. He was the biggest in America, and he'd used barrels of whiskey to buy political support. He had the largest marijuana plantations, and we know that he smoked marijuana because THC residues were studied in his pipe. So those are some, not all, some of the highlights and lowlights. Slave owner, though he did give up his slaves. He didn't want war around the world. He wanted peace, and he believed in diplomacy, and yet he felt, as many did at the time, that the Native Americans that were here should be assimilated in by the rules of his day instead of respecting their culture, their history, and their traditions. And that led to a lot of them dying, and he has to be held completely responsible for that. Far more died in Native Americans because of him and Andrew Jackson and Thomas Jefferson than other presidents. So then here is the question. If you were to judge George Washington, how would you judge him? Do you believe that he should have monuments removed? Should we forgive any of the things he did based upon what he did right? Or was he just, like so many people, a failed person, as most people are? No one's perfect. But in order to get a better understanding of this, you've got to bring it back to the hypocrisy of today, which is everything is hypocrisy. Because I'm going to compare him to Barack Obama. Barack Obama was, for a lot of African Americans and people of color, and a lot of poor white people, they believed that he was the answer to politics as usual, corruption as usual, war as usual, and them getting nothing except the backhand of the elites. So he was given the Nobel Peace Prize, same one that Martin Luther King was given. But then we look at his record. He was responsible for the invasion and regime change in Libya with 9,700 airstrikes and sorties, 7,700 precision-guided bombs dropped, all with depleted uranium. Tens of thousands of Libyans killed, including men, women, and children. Mind you, they're people of color. He escalated the wars in Afghanistan. He escalated the wars in Iraq. More Americans were killed under Obama than Bush, and high rates of civilian deaths. He was responsible for escalating the drone warfare and keeping it secret. He brought the U.S. into Yemen with the support of Saudi Arabia. Instead of saying to Saudi Arabia, no, Yemen's the poorest country in the Middle East, so don't invade them, he not only gave full support to Saudi Arabia for the invasion, but he turned over to the Saudis, all of our U.S. intelligence, our satellites, the CIA worked hand in hand, the national defense groups all worked hand in hand with the Saudis. And the Saudis are notoriously racist. As a whole nation, they're racist. They're just one of the most deplorable, despicable groups of people on the planet. If you doubt me, be a gay and go there and try to get some rights. You'll be thrown off a building and killed. Well, why didn't anyone stop and say, then let's boycott everything from Saudi Arabia, including its oil? Why didn't Hillary Clinton? But they didn't. This is part of the hypocrisy. And if you care about women's rights and you show up to get an award in the United States for women's rights, what about the rights of Saudi women, including women who have been beheaded, women who have been beaten until they died, for no other reason than they don't have the same rights as a man? So here's Barack Obama behind all this. And although the U.S. intervention in Somalia started at the end of the Bush term, Obama escalated it dramatically. On domestic issues, and by the way, Obama and Hillary Clinton were responsible for the CIA and other groups going in and undermining democratically elected governments, such as in Honduras or in the Ukraine or in other countries, seven of those. And yet they were never held accountable for any of this. The Obama administration knew that Assad did not gas his own people. This was proven by Seymour Hersh, later by five separate investigative journalists, but not once did his State Department or Defense Department say, you're right, we simply want Assad out, so we're willing to lie about it and create a false information in the media, and the media went right along with it. Of course they did. But domestically, women suffered job creation under Obama, including African American women, which was worse than during Reagan. Employment of blacks fell 19% during his 8 years. Child poverty rose by 20%. Obama's claim of a great job growth was shown by Harvard and Princeton analysts to be primarily part-time only jobs. 94% of his so-called job growth claim were just part-time jobs and low-paying jobs. He promised criminal justice reform because of war on drugs was destroying the black community. He not only didn't have any war on drugs reversals, he increased the policing, and that caused more blacks and Latinos to go to jail. So immigration reform, remember, it was Barack Obama and his administration that built those human terrible cages. Trump was blamed for it. Trump didn't build them. It was Obama. Obama and Clinton exported more people. Go back and watch, as I have, in his both Clinton's State of the Union address and Obama's State of the Union address, and you hear him say that no illegal aliens should be allowed just to come into the country. But suddenly, those two who were making those statements and throwing over several million people out of the country, including children, and putting them in cages, that was all wiped clean. And why? Because the Democrats were smart. They wanted to show that they were wanting open arms, no borders, come into our country because they wanted those as votes. You got to understand where all this is going. Also, Obama promised to form international groups to help Iraq refugees. He didn't. Expand Family Medical Leave Act to include leave for those who experience domestic violence and sexual assault. To create a $1.5 billion fund for states' programs to aid families' medical leave, which largely affects minority. And it's just, he never kept any of these. Expand child and dependent care credit. No. Sign Employee Free Choice Act to make it easier for workers to unionize. No. Create retirement savings tax credit for those in low-income bracket. No. Create a $10 billion foreclosure prevention fund. No. In fact, not a single American that I'm aware of was Obama. By executive order, he could have done it. Stop over 7 million homes from being foreclosed on, 24 million Americans made homeless, 16 million hungry children. Nothing was done to help those people. It didn't matter what color they were. So how many of those could be considered racist? Well, how about all those involving killing and destroying the homes, the lives of people in foreign countries? But why is he not held to the same standard of accountability as anyone historically? I believe that you should hold people accountable. You should look at the best and worst that they are and then make your decision, just like if you were a jury deciding the outcome of a case. But we're not doing that today. One group is excluded completely. If you're an insider, nothing happens to you. If you're Hillary Clinton, you break the law, nothing happens to you. But if you're the opposition, then there's a different standard. That's what we've come to. Your thoughts on this? Do you see the hypocrisy in all this? Shouldn't we have one standard for all people? And should we have open and honest debates before we make unilateral actions? I believe we should. I want to hear your thoughts. Let me give you our talkback number. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And also, if you can't get through now, or if you're listening to this program on archive, you can call in. Our voicemail is 862-800-6805. 862-800-6805. So that's the question I've got for you. I'd like to hear your answer. Now we're going to go to a couple of voicemails. And we're going to start off because of the coronavirus, because what we're seeing now is around the world, they've seemed to be dealing correctly with coronavirus. At least 30 countries are having all their children go back to school, no masks, no separation, because all the scientific evidence shows that they are the least susceptible. More children will die of the flu or a cold this year than die of coronavirus. By almost 300% more will die of that. And so why aren't the children where they need to be in school? And especially the youngest children who are almost completely immune from this. And why are we not doing more to use inexpensive and off-patent drugs that have been shown to work. Why are these being denied and denounced by the New York Times and mainstream media? We're going to find out part of this right now, because the man behind the Lancet Gate, a breaking science scandal with global ramifications, with Dr. James Todaro, T-O-D-A-R-O.
I've been following COVID-19 since January. It looked like it was going to be a highly infectious virus that was going to be leaving China, coming to Europe and the U.S. And I was doing a lot of research on it. And that's when I kind of, working with a colleague, came up with the proposition of using chloroquine, or its closely related derivative, hydroxychloroquine, as a potential treatment for coronavirus. And so we published that paper in mid-March, March 13th, after Elon Musk tweeted a 200-year-old journal. It's either the first or second most prestigious medical journal out there. So basically, if something is published and makes it through the peer review process for The Lancet, physicians and healthcare professionals essentially look at it as almost like God's word of medicine. The Lancet study was supposedly a multinational observational analysis of about 96,000 hospitalized COVID-19 patients. So massive, massive database that collected data all the way from December into about mid-April on these patients. And what they're specifically looking at was how these patients did when treated with either hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine plus a macrolide, which a macrolide, the one you're probably most familiar with is azithromycin. So it's an antibiotic, but also can have some anti-inflammatory, antiviral properties as well.
Sorry to interject here. And that was the combination that President Trump used prophylactically in recent weeks, correct?
So the prophylactic regimen is a little bit different from the treatment regimen, which actually also, I think, affected the most recent New England Journal of Medicine study. They came out looking at it as prophylactic. But so prophylactic is for... There's two different types of prophylaxis. It's called pre-exposure prophylaxis and post-exposure prophylaxis. And Trump was taking the medication as post-exposure prophylaxis. There's someone that he came in contact with, I think maybe even two people at the White House, who were later discovered to have to be infected with coronavirus. And so he took, I believe, a single dose of azithromycin, as well as zinc and then hydroxychloroquine. So the hydroxychloroquine, he continued throughout a two-week course. Because by that point, if he hadn't been infected with the coronavirus, then it was kind of unlikely that he was going to. So the initial dose of azithromycin is probably just to combat, kind of that one early dose to maybe give you a little boost. But that kind of is a little bit more controversial. There was less research on post-exposure prophylaxis with azithromycin. But I'd say the mainstay of his regimen was the hydroxychloroquine.
Got it. I just wanted to just tease in with folks that might have seen azithromycin associated with hydroxychloroquine, where they might have heard that or where they might have seen that. So,
but that is the original regimen. So that's the regimen that was first studied by in the south of France by Dr. Didier Raoul. And that's what he showed effectiveness in his clinical treatment of patients. And so that's why that has been such a kind of studied regimen, I would say, over the past couple months. Kind of get back to the study. So what they discovered was to me shocking. Not shocking to a lot of the mainstream media who had been saying, remember, all along, essentially since we came out with this paper, that hydroxychloroquine will harm you. It's got a lot of risks, particularly from the cardiac side of things, where it can give you a heart attack. It can cause you to go into arrhythmias. And so when this study came out, it was very quickly embraced by a lot of the mainstream media as supporting what they'd been saying for a while. And if you followed the news at all, when the president was taking this medication as a prophylaxis, there was a lot of negative attention on how dangerous this was and irresponsible this was of him to do this. So the study came out and actually showed that you had twice the risk of dying from COVID-19 if you were treated with hydroxychloroquine or chloroquine. So this isn't just saying that there's no benefit to this medication. They were actually saying you are more likely to die, significantly more likely to die if you get treated with this as opposed to not treated with it. And then as a secondary outcome, it showed that you are at a higher risk of developing a cardiac arrhythmia. So your heart rhythm would be basically thrown out of whack to the layperson. That was really shocking to me. One thing that I've been saying since March is that hydroxychloroquine very, very likely has no effect, no benefit if used late in treatment of COVID-19. It's by that point you have such a systemic inflammatory response to this disease. You potentially have cytokine storm. you have maybe a raging pneumonia, and it's unlikely that hydroxychloroquine will help you. So if the study came out showing that the results showed no benefit, I'd be kind of more inclined to believe them. But it came out actually showing that it's harmful, and that didn't quite make sense. That didn't make sense to Dr. Raul, Dr. Zelenko, and a lot of other independent researchers like myself around the world who were studying the results of the Lancet study. What was very interesting was how quickly...
Okay, so what has happened is this. The person that gave the Lancet all that background information didn't do any of it. And so they had a false study. And then that false study was used by Anthony Fauci and the New York Times and everyone else to condemn this particular drug. Now, when the drug is used early and at low doses, it is shown to be safe but extremely effective. This week, the Henry Ford Medical Center in Detroit, one of their largest hospitals, did two studies. The second one is ongoing now with 3,000 people, and the first showed 50% of all the COVID patients who received the drug survived and were cured. But there's another person in Texas that had a drug, an asthma drug, non-toxic, given to babies, and it has a 100% cure rate. Why aren't we promoting these drugs? This is how the game is played. Deny the virtue of anything like vitamin C or vitamin D or an inexpensive non-toxic drug like the asthma drug and put it all behind Big Pharma's multi-thousand dollars per treatment drugs because the National Institute of Health is the world's largest holder of patents. Most people are not aware of that. So every time a drug or let's say a vaccine comes out, they're making the most money. That's the bottom line. I said we'd take your calls. We have Daryl from the Bronx. Hi, Daryl. Your turn.
Greetings, Gary. Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York. How are you today?
Doing good. Thank you, Daryl.
I just have, I was trying to follow your lot. First of all, I want to respect all the work that you do and all the study you do. And I'm attempting to understand, since I know that you study a great deal, have you been on the Black Lives Matter website or Diversity of Change website, et cetera, et cetera? The groups who are ostensibly leading the peaceful demonstrations as compared to the violence that you see that sometimes is conflated with the demonstrations. When I view the people who are out in the street now, oftentimes when you hear people comment, they conflate both the violence against just property at random, especially government property, and they conflate the violence against the property of those who own businesses, especially, as you pointed out many times, people of color's businesses, with the people who are doing the demonstrating. And as far as I can see, and as far as the research that I've seen, that neither Black Lives Matter or Diversity of Change or the groups who I understand are leading the demonstrations are responsible for that. Now, speaking to your point about how do we judge those who... how do we judge those who need to be honored in some fashion? I believe that people can honor whoever they want as long as they leave me alone. And what I'm finding is a 71-year-old person of African descent living in the borders of the United States of North America, that even when I achieve things, there is a system that if I go, quote unquote, too far or get out of my place in the system, things are systematically taken away from me. So, for instance, you talked about Greenwood the other day, Tulsa, Oklahoma. However, I just found out 2 years ago about Wilmington, Delaware. And then there are towns in Florida and other places in the country that a person of African descent, when they began to prosper, the governmental structures failed to protect them, and at point they lost both their property and sometimes their lives. So all of that is to say is that my cognizance dissidence comes into, A, I'm supposed to be an American. I fought in the illegitimate war in Vietnam, and I was responsible indirectly for hundreds of thousands of people dying because I walked on bombing platforms. How am I supposed to reconcile? Oh, by the way, I really thank you for pointing out the criminal activity of past President Barack Hussein Obama in the context that he's the only African president of the United States who was responsible for attacking and destroying the richest African country on the continent. So that definitely needs to be pointed out over and over again. Skin color don't cut you no slack.
So, okay, let me address some of your issues, please, Daryl.
Thank you.
I believe that in peaceful demonstration, because I've led hundreds, as you probably are aware, but my demonstrations are not violent, and I don't believe in violent demonstrations, nor do I believe in those who use a demonstration in ways that are not honest and not upfront. If a person has a particular motive, let us know the motive. If I want to close down Indian Point, I'm going to write articles on it. I'm going to do a document on it, like knocking on the devil's door, and I'm going to distribute that. I'm going to see, can we get any change by legislators, New York State or the governor, to close down a place that I consider a danger to us, all of us, no matter what your background or age or ethnicity. Radiation, you know, it doesn't discriminate. It kills and sickens everyone that is exposed to it. And we know that all these nuclear power plants leak. So first is an educational program. There's no ideology behind it. There's no political agenda attached to it, secretly, covertly, or otherwise. It's just close down the plant. We don't need it. We can use hydroelectric. We can use green. We can use a bladeless wind, the newest technologies, and even in the rivers of New York, including the Hudson River, we can use wave power. So we have alternatives that are safe and effective. It's just, do we have the will to do it? But let's just say that in the process of doing that, we had Asian provocateurs, and we did. And I stopped them, even at Indian Point. I saw those people who were there not because they wanted to close down Indian Point. They wanted to draw attention. They may even have been government plants because they wanted to go out and lay down in the road. And I ask them, what is the point of you laying down in the road when we have all the media here and we have all these scientists and doctors and activists we brought around the United States to address this issue in a peaceful way? Because if you lay down, I can promise you that's the only film footage we're going to see on the networks. You laying down, you being arrested, and not a single word of all these people that we brought in, Helen Collicott from Australia and all these others, and Michio Kaku, no one's going to hear what they have to say against nuclear power. So we told the police, they're not with us. I told the media, they're not with us. They have their own agenda. As a result, our message got out. So it saddens me when I see legitimate protests that all of us should support, that I support. And then you have the intermixing of the looters. You have the intermixing of those who clearly have an ideological and political agenda. And that will be conflated. Now, separated out, and whatever Black Lives Matter ultimately stands for, I know it's, you know, they've gone on record now of supporting Marxism, and I don't have time today, but I will go into Marx, the best and worst of Marx, and there's a whole dark side to Marx, including his statements about blacks, and with Engels, because you think of Marx and Engels together, and if someone complains, well, that was Engels writing that, well, it was Marx and he in the same paper on the same book. But then I look at that and I say, well, what then is the ultimate agenda? Is the ultimate agenda to become the most powerful political force, knowing that you're going to have a large segment of the African-American community voting in your direction? And when I see the Ford Foundation giving $100 million and I see George Soros giving or causing $100 million and I see Michael Jordan, I see hundreds of millions of dollars, nobody gives this kind of money because someone wants to go out and protest against an injustice. Nobody. Not historically, not now. There has to be a deeper agenda. I'm interested in the deeper story. That's why on this program you will hear people who went to Libya and saw the destruction. We had them on the air six times, who were in Libya during the bombing. that Libya was, as you said, the number one nation in Africa, longest lifespan, most freedoms. Most of the legislators were women. They created their own decentralized democracy, and they had no debt. They had the gold denier that was the threat, taking everyone off the dollar for their crude oil. And now it's just a completely destroyed state with tens of thousands dead and open slavery in the market. Now, isn't that the irony of ironies that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama caused a return to slavery to Libya, which hadn't seen slavery in a long, long time? So we, at some point, we have to simply stop everything and say, what is the basis, the real basis of each movement? And just be honest about it. And if it's legitimate, support it. If it's not, if there's a political agenda by manipulating everyone, then call them out. And we're not doing that because everyone's afraid. So I believe that we should be very honest and very careful in what we do. And then you're right. If you feel by your own research that there is something you can no longer support about a historical figure, then no longer support them. If you believe that there is a figure during that same period of time that represented a greater virtue for all of us, then let's commemorate that person. Do we have to have a monument? No, we don't have to have monuments. But we do have to have educational programs, honest education, not political education, honest education. That's been lacking. If so, then we should have an honest review of our curriculum and to see what should be changed. And I think that's the question here. But let me just give you one idea. So if they're saying, and that's one of the words they're saying, we must erase everything dealing with historical racism. Okay. All right. Are you looking at this imbalance? You're just saying if anyone's associated with this, remember, because that sets up an ideological contradiction. If you're saying if you've made a mistake in the past, irrespective of your cultural intonation, irrespective of your conditioning, if you've made a mistake that's racial, that's unforgiving. Well, then can you hold the same standard as you want to do with the monuments? Fine. You want to do it with the most racist group in American history? The Democratic Party. It's the oldest voter-based political party in the world that goes back to the Jefferson Democratic Republican Party. Remember, at one point, you didn't have Democrats and Republicans. You have Democrat Republicans. You were both in 1790s that opposed the Federalist Party and later the Whig Party. And originally phrased as the party of the common man, that's what they said, and it stood for individual rights, good, state sovereignty, good, and they opposed banks. All that's good. Yet at its inception, it opposed abolition. It supported slavery. And what we today call the Democratic Party emerged in the late 1820s, largely by the efforts of Martin Van Buren and Andrew Jackson, following fractions in the Democratic Republican Party, which collapsed in 1824. Now, during the Jacksonian period, it was made up primarily of farmers, city laborers, and Irish Catholics, and there was a lot of emphasis on the Jefferson's idea of an agrarian society that saw centralized government as the enemy of individual freedom. But because of its agrarian base, Democrats, particularly Jackson Democrats, were pro-expansionism into the West and were responsible for more of the atrocities committed against Native Americans and favored the war against Mexico. Now, Mexico would still be Mexico. It wouldn't have been annexed, meaning Texas, part of California, that whole area, one-fourth the size of the United States, was annexed from Mexico, and there was lots of death. That was your Democrats and those who wanted to be a part of that Manifest Destiny. They were big supporters, Democrats, of Manifest Destiny. And it opposed immigration nationalism. And under Jackson, Democrats mostly feared the concentration of economic and political power to benefit special interest groups and create corporate monopolies that favor the rich. So the end of federal support to private banks, they didn't want any of that, and restrict the use of paper currency, which they distrusted. They were strongest in the South because of their anti-abolitionist position and later identified themselves as the white man's party. That's what they called themselves, the white man's party. And Abraham Lincoln's most solidified the black support in the Republican Party. Isn't it ironic? Then the Republicans were against slavery, pro-abolition, and the Democrats. But after the Civil War, they opposed the radical Reconstruction and the Republican Party support for black civil and political rights. And at the end of Reconstruction, which was in 1877, the Democrats controlled every single southern state, and white supremacy and racism and the rise of the Ku Klux Klan was most instilled in the Democratic Party. And only with Franklin Roosevelt did it fully adopt progressive ideals, liberal ideals, which was the basis of the New Deal coalition. If it weren't for, make clear on this, if it weren't for the election of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, himself flawed, himself in making racist gestures by interning all the Japanese Americans, other things I'll talk about in another program, we would still have the Democrats supporting slavery. It was under the Republican President Hoover that in 1929 with the crash and ensuing Great Depression that this gave FDR and the Democrats a landslide victory in elections. And because FDR's handling of the Depression and his New Deal that also strengthened African Americans' place in society, black allegiances to the Republicans started to shift to the Democrats. And whereas Democrats had a history of expansionism within North America, it was the Republicans that became the primary voice of expansionism overseas. Hence, so many of our wars and operations against socialist and free democratic movements in other countries was fueled by Republicans. So today, jump ahead, and we're not talking about jump a big time ahead, within our lifetimes. You're 71 years old. This is within your lifetime. Democrats tend to be more now for official science, but not real science. Hence, real science is vaccines have never been proven safe and effective. And drugging of people with depression and anxiety with antipsychotic medication, antidepressant medication, is not scientific, but they support it completely. So whatever the government does, they support. What independent thinkers and scientists want, they oppose. So they're completely behind Big Pharma, Silicon Valley, renewable energies, transhumanism, and the identity politics. They're for the visas, the BB visas, to replace American workers with seniority with cheap labor from India. And they're for artificial intelligence. Yeah. So they're for fossil fuel industry, yet they'll claim that they were for solar. But remember what Barack Obama did. He supported the pipeline. He did not support the Native American lands, the Sioux and others, the Dakota that the pipeline was going through. He cited 100%, as did Hillary Clinton. Interesting how in the 19th century, Republicans represented the North and Democrats the South. Today, it's absolutely reversed. So today, Democrats repeatedly show their death to many voices in the country. Everything is exclusionary. That's why Trump picked up so many former white blue-collar workers who were not racist, were not redneck, you know, xenophobics, but they saw more lies from Clinton in 8 years, Bush, and then Obama, so they'd had it. Widespread hypocrisy over pontificating classical democratic principles of the common man, but supporting private banking, the bailout of Wall Street, the bailout of corporations, not a penny for average people. And Obamacare is an excellent example. And with Clinton, the era of the New Democrat, which betrayed virtually the FDR legacy and became increasingly Republican in being pro-Wall Street, pro-business, and this continues to this very day. And you can look at Bernie Sanders, how the Democrats handled Bernie Sanders. He would have been president today if it weren't for Hillary Clinton and her colleagues. So the 19th century party focused more on grassroots state rights and opposing big government. And it's the opposite now. Just something to think about. I appreciate your input. Thank you very much, Daryl. Sorry I don't have time for more. One quick thing today, and I just wanted to share this with you. I'm going to get into the whole aspect of what people don't know about Marx, and they should, and I'm going to share that with you. And what is good? There's a lot of good about Marxism, and there's a lot of bad, and bad is really bad. But we've been out, just as a separate issue, we've been out of supremacy strawberry for months because of coronavirus and shortages. And by the way, as I predicted, the shortages are everywhere. Everywhere there are shortages of health food items. You can't get them. People are hoarding them. They bought a lot of, for example, organic baked beans. You can't buy organic baked beans. I tried last week and none to be made. And then I called a person. I said, do you have any baked beans? This is a wholesaler. No, we're out of them. Well, we were out of vitamin C. because China began to use almost all the world supply. We found a source out of the Netherlands. So as of today, we just received 4,000 bottles. Normally we get 1,000 bottles of Supremacy Strawberry. And this is the big jar, and it lasts you months. And I'm limiting this to three to a person. That's the max, because I do have more. So Supremacy, the high-potency bioflavonoids, the buffered mineral ascorbates, and you're going to get a free DVD, Supercharge Your Immune System, with this. And this has got all the best to help with your health, because it's just, well, it's the best of the best. All right? If you want a really powerful vitamin C, this gives it to you. All right? This has got the, this tastes just like strawberry. By the way, it's got beet juice in it. And it's got the selenium, acerola complex, magnesium ascorbate, potassium ascorbate, zinc ascorbate, manganese ascorbate. It's vegan. It tastes phenomenal. Comes as a powder. It's a big jar, 24 ounces. So we finally, after 4 months of being out of stock, it's back today. And we're normally, if it was 1,000 or 1,500 bottles, my normal run, I would have one per person, but we are allowing three. And we've already placed our next order, so in 8 weeks we'll get our next order, so we should have enough. So give a call. I'm going to give you the number to call to get your Supremacy plus Supercharge Your Immune System that will really help you at this moment. Here's the number to call, all right, to get your Supremacy. The number is 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, to get your Supremacy large 24-ounce strawberry flavor, and you can get up to three bottles, no more than that. You know what? We're going to take one more person. I saw we had one more person hanging there. Sorry, I don't know your name. Oh, they're not there. They left. Okay. By the way, what I was going to say to Daryl, the danger of opening a door where a relatively small group of people can militarize or weaponize a legitimate concern is that then you're going to polarize. Isn't it better to look at something with the idea that if people have made mistakes, we should hold in balance what that mistake was, and what did they contribute to show redemption for their mistakes? Because if we can't show redemption, if we can't show forgiveness at some level of our consciousness, if we can't say mistakes have been made throughout all of history, terrible mistakes, and some mistakes you don't forgive, like Hitler and the Ottoman Empire, the Turks slaughter the Armenians over a man and a half, or about that, and the gypsies, and all the other atrocities throughout history. But we then have to look at what happens when people are in our prison system by the millions and they come out. Then the question is, you committed a crime. You committed a serious crime. Should you be forgiven or allowed another chance? Or should you be scrubbed from history? You don't exist. You're shamed. We can't hire you. We don't want anything to do with you. Remember, at some point, someone's going to throw that argument right back at you. In which case, then what do you say? What are you allowed to do and not allowed to do where you can be forgiven or understood in a different context? Or is it all or nothing? Is everything now with the woke politics that if you make any mistake that someone considers egregious, you're gone? Because that's what's happening now. They took one argument and now they're applying it to everyone they disagree with. A woman says, don't all lives matter? And she loses her job at a university. No discussion. She's out for one statement. So what happens when we stop all freedom of speech? What happens when we don't allow other people's opinion? What happens when we repeat history? What happens when we have a new form of segregation and isolation? And as you said, in your own life, you have seen where there's a point to where you have to stay in your place. If you exceed it, you can be reprimanded or attacked because of your ethnicity or your class status. More often than not, it's the class status. So ask yourself this. When I was in, one time I was in Beverly Hills and I was going for my morning run. I was out there to do a morning television show with Regis Philbin on ABC. And I saw some police pull over a guy. And I just stopped. I was curious. And it was a guy going to work, working at a place. And he was Mexican-American. And the police were wanting to know, what are you doing in this neighborhood? Well, why didn't they stop me? Because he had already been identified in people's minds as he could be a problem. Who's the one who created that? Not the police, the wealthy people whose houses that he was going by, the gated community with the armed guards who tell you, shame you, virtue shame you, don't have walls and don't have guns. But they had guns and they had walls and they had the police protecting them and protecting the people. So you see, a lot of this has to do with class. Within class, you then can break it down by subgroups, education and income and race, ethnicity, religion. So yes, we live in a time when we have to reaffirm a better way, a more moral way, a more ethical way, a more spiritual way of dealing with people, especially people that are different than us. And instead of attacking people based upon microaggressions currently, or historical aggressions in the past, shouldn't we have a moment of pause and think well of the consequences and how best to approach this? Just a thought. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.